Well, we're here at what your senior pastor wishes he could tell you. So, hey, Dave, why don't you pray for us?
Now, let me say this, kidding aside. Was it 76 you came to Springfield? 77? I graduated high school in 80. So Tim is goofy. And Tim's Tim. But you're never going to meet a guy who loves teenagers and dedicated his life more than Tim. So, and that's part of his charm is that. And I say that jokingly because we all have that. I'm goofier than he is, but he loves kids. And I appreciate his ministry in my life. So thank you, brother, and for saving my life. Father, thank you for Tim, and thank you for his ministry to me. And being a mentor to me, and just for what he's been, and thank you for these few days we've been able to just kind of make new friends and reconnect and be recharged in the ministries that you've given us, and ask that as we take stuff away, it would be not just ideas for programs and stuff like that, but it would be life change within us and our hearts, and then you could use us more effectively than you have in the past. And thank you for Tim and Mel and others who have been part of planning this, and ask that you would bless them for that, and be encouraged by what you've done in the last few days. So we'd ask that in this session and the one to follow with Tim speaking, that you would, in the home stretch, you would bless us from your word, and you would continue to encourage us and to teach us and help us to be even more renewed and recharged from this morning's sessions. Thank you for your goodness to us and for the high, high privilege of being called to serve you in the places that you have. It's in Jesus' name we pray. Amen.
All right, you got your notes in front of you, and some of these are going to dovetail as we work through. And part of this was just we sat down one morning and we were laughing and we were, we didn't cry, but there's times when we've been over the years learning stuff. But we had a kind of a question to get them started. Didn't know if we want to go there.
Yeah, probably time-wise not too much. But
okay.
If we had time, what we were going to do is what your senior pastor wishes he could tell you. We were going to flip that around just for fun and say, if you could tell your senior pastor anything that you wanted to, what would you tell your senior pastor?
Oh, you gotta take a couple minutes.
What's that?
Take a couple
minutes. You gotta at least take a couple minutes.
All right.
I'm just
off the top of your head.
And we'll use fake names every time. Mr. Brooks.
Mr. Brooks. The bad thing is I've got two of my here with me, so I got
And that might be a workshop or down the road, maybe, but since we've got 14 points here and we need to save time for questions at the end.
Yeah, let's go, but keep that in your mind and rant to us inbox on Facebook or something.
And let me say this, too, to kind of set this up.
Go for it.
Sorry. If you're wondering, if you don't know us really, why we're up here, Mark and I have done ministry together in some form for how many years?
Oh, 25, maybe close to 30.
Yeah. Yeah. Retreats and youth trips and mission trips. All-nighters.
And youth concerts. And, yeah.
We're kind of like, I was telling John at breakfast, kind of like Abbott and Costello of ministry. Like we know each other. We work off each other. We're totally different personalities. We know what and this is going to be kind of one of the points we're going to talk about, but it's been really, really good for me, and I think for him, for us. And so it's just a kind of a cool thing that God's given us. And so that's kind of why we're up here together, is this is what we do. And we could probably finish each other's sentences. We have a retreat. We go home this coming weekend. We do a winter retreat together in Wisconsin. This will be our 24th year of doing this winter retreat together at the camp. Camp Fairwood in Wisconsin. So this is what we do. So that's kind of why we're doing this together. So, all right. You want to hit the...
Yeah, number one, be aware. Be aware. And so I'm speaking as the senior pastor to you. I'm a sinner too. Even though sometimes I don't even admit that to you. Like, I'm the guy that has issues with my kids. I'm the guy who sins. I'm the guy who's proud. I'm the guy who doesn't tell you sometimes what I'm thinking. I hurt. And you need to know that.
I struggle with probably the same things that you do. In fact, not, you could take probably out of there. You know, it just, and sometimes I think, and both Mark and I did youth ministry probably for almost 30 years in one form or another. And now I am a senior pastor, and years and years now he is a senior. So I remember, like, looking at my senior pastor, like, he just doesn't struggle, doesn't have the same stuff that I do. And now that I am a senior pastor, I know that he struggled with the same stuff. You know, it just, that's being a human being. So I think sometimes I had my senior pastor at a place where it wasn't right. Like, he's not going through the stuff I am when he was. So.
And we're looking at it as guys that I want young guys and young ladies that are working with me, I want them to see. I know there are idiot pastors out there. I know there are. And so when we were putting this together, I'm thinking, there's probably a guy that would never write that. There's probably a senior pastor, maybe your senior pastor, would never write that. I'm a sinner. It's like, the heck, I'm telling you. You know, I want you to think that I'm Captain Amazing. And so it's one of those things where I know that we're kind of tainted in the fact that we, youth ministry helped us. You know, isn't it great going through youth ministry? I think that there, I've seen these guys when we were at BBC, there were guys that went instantly into the pastorate. Yeah. And I watched them with, like, how they treated, or I heard about how they treated volunteers, and how, and I'm thinking, part of the beauty of being a youth pastor first is learning how to work under authority. And some of them, they just instantly think they're amazing. And they're like, they bark out orders and stuff. And I'm going, you're an idiot. You know, and I'll use that word a lot because they are. You know. But, so, and yeah, I said that.
All right. Number two, be patient. The first three are kind of a trilogy here. They kind of go together. So be aware I'm a sinner, and then be patient. I'm growing too. Yesterday I turned 54, you know, and I realize more and more how much farther I have to go in my walk with Christ. And in fact, I think it gets steeper in some regards. Just, I don't know if that's just me or not, but I see the where I want to go, but man, I got so far to go, and I got to work on these things, and I'm still struggling with the same things. So patience again. I think I think in staff relationships, and one of the reasons this is important, in my opinion, if this relationship isn't healthy for youth ministry people, it's gonna hamstring everything you do. This is such an important thing, the relationship with the senior pastor, and so getting this right, and a lot of that is from the second chair having the right attitude about the first chair guy, and patience is huge. Just like, and number three, you know, we'll kind of clump these together, and praying about that. Being patient, being prayerful for the senior pastor, and stuff you might not know is going on, but still praying for that guy.
Back to patient for a second. Because of what my son Ben is dealing with, I had never thought about this before, but the doctor that has been really working alongside us said he really believes that the reason that they call people that are getting work done at a hospital patients is because healing takes time. It's a process. And so it's almost like for years they would go, be patient. And so that ultimately that name became the name. And so understand that working through stuff takes time. It's a process. And pray, and see God work, because there may be a breakthrough. I don't know if you ever saw the scene from Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. I love movies. I love Jimmy Stewart, and there's a scene. If you haven't seen that movie, just watch it. But he's just this young guy, and I look at him like a youth pastor kind of guy, and the senior senator for that state is involved in some stuff, and he always thought that he was the greatest thing until he started seeing some things, and then ultimately it was like a turning point when Mr. Smith takes a stand on some things, and then the guy finally admits he was wrong. And so pray for a revival in your senior pastor's life, or just pray for him, because sometimes the biggest issues, they can do stuff that just is hurtful, and sometimes I don't know if they even know they're doing it. I just heard so many stories, and I had a senior pastor that I worked with that was a great guy, but there were times I was just missing him. A lot of it was generational, and but now our relationship is really a nice thing. He'll call me. I think he considers me one of his best friends. And he didn't. I don't think he had a lot of friends. He had a lot of acquaintances, but I loved him. And so, be prayerful.
Number four, be understanding. Youth ministry is just one slice of the pie. I have an axiom that I say. I told Tim this one time. All experts are unbalanced. A guy or a girl who's an expert in an area thinks everybody should be about that. But that's a good thing. You want those kind of people. You want the Tim Algram who's an expert in youth ministry, who thinks everybody ought to be in youth. Like, why aren't you? Why isn't everybody signing up for this? And that, so that's a good thing. That's a very cool thing. But as you step back as being a staff guy in a church, other things are going on, it's good to have a reality check. Like, this really isn't the only thing going on. 95% of our church budget shouldn't be going to youth ministry. So it's just one slice of what God's doing in that body. So just kind of understanding that.
Yeah, I was thinking about my daughter. She was like, talking about these conferences. She loves going to conferences. And Iaconelli used to have this talk before the whole conference. Mike Iaconelli, who's like one of the founders of Youth Specialties, and then Wayne Rice, and he would do this talk at the beginning that I just loved, where he'd say, and I'm glad we didn't say this at the beginning, but he'd go, hey, some of you guys need to work in your marriage. Buy a bottle of wine, go up in your room, and don't come down, and buy the tapes at the end and go home and fake to your pastor, you went to every seminar. You know? But some of these people will go to every seminar. There's comm ministry, and they learn to juggle, and they're puppets, and they're doing all this stuff. And you go, oh, we got to start this ministry. And your senior pastor's like, they want to kill you. You
shit. Tim and your beat up Mr.
But yeah, so it's one of those things where it is just one slice of the pie. And understand that. And understand also all the things that he's dealing with. Now, some senior pastors, they aren't doing jack, really. But there's a lot of them that are doing a lot, you know.
And sometimes he'll
be honest. I'm serious. They do prayer meeting, they preach, and they visit people in the hospital. But I'm not doing enough. Go on.
I lost my train of thought.
I'm sorry.
Oh. Sometimes because of that, he'll seem like the bad guy. Like, why can't we do this? And so it's kind of like, and we'll talk about this later, it's another point, but it's like it's trusting God with that, like, and trusting him. Just, I'm going to trust that he has the health of the whole body in mind here, and understanding that my thing is not the only thing going on. So number five is that, be trusting. We had a guy on staff.
You're now free to move around the country.
When I first took over, I really tried to hire a youth guy. I really did, but it just wasn't working out. So we hired a worship leader to really ramp up and improve our worship service. And the conversation I most had with this guy was trust me. He was a young guy. He was just out of Cedarville. Really good musician. Really what we needed for that time. And he only lasted a year and a half, which was probably a long time for him, actually. He was one of those guys. So it was all good. But I don't know how many times I said, you just have to trust me. Well, why can't, and he wanted to go 100 miles an hour. And I'm telling you, my hands were cramped from pulling in the reins with this guy. He just wanted to run. He just wanted, let's do this, let's do this, let's change this. And I'm like, all the time. And at the end of the day, it came down to, you're just going to have to trust me and how God's working in my life and how God's leading me to what's best for our church. I don't know. I don't know if he ever did, but that was a conversation we had a lot.
And I worked with a guy who he'd go to conferences and come back and he'd want to do all these different things, but also he would be doing stuff behind the scenes. And you know, you want to trust your team to do stuff, but he would be implementing things as a worship leader, and actually, after a while, he's making people mad in the church because he, you know, another idea, and he'd go up, and their people were starting to avoid him because it's like, the reason you're going to spend time with me is because you want to use me to get something. And so your senior pastor sometimes is trying to save you from that. But you should be doing stuff, but boy, be careful.
Number six is be loving.
Love the church and love our church. There seems to be this trend. Dave and I were talking about this. Do you remember that? It was like a rap that came out recently, and it was on YouTube, and he wrote a book like, love Jesus, but we don't necessarily love religion, or something like that. And I, you know, forgot what the guy's name is.
I don't remember.
Yeah, but he...
I remember.
Yeah, that's it. And that kind of rubbed me the wrong way. It was so hot, and people going, hey, did you see this? Like, it's the newest thing in the world. Did you see this? And stuff, and I understand. But the part of it is, it was like anti-church. That's what I picked up from it. And, but you had heard something that happened.
Yeah, actually, the end of that story, I don't know if you know more about it than I do, but he became like a viral rock star through this rap about just ripping on organized church and all this. And behind the scenes, godly men came alongside, like emailed him and talked to him and said, hey, and kind of helped him. And he pulled back on that. He kind of recanted that, you know, and he put out another, I was wrong about that. And one of the points these guys made was, well, Jesus was religious. He went to temple. He knew the law. He did the things, you know. So, you know, that's not the enemy. That's not the bad thing here. So, but there's this trend of that's kind of flavor of the day of just hammering the church and ripping on the church, and I kind of see that, and I kind of hear that in younger people, just this lack of love for the bride of Christ, which is heartbreaking when you think about that. And so and I see that in young ministry people who are actually getting paid by the church. Like, oh, this is the problem, and we're the problem. No, church isn't the problem. Church is the answer. I might be the problem, but the church isn't the problem. So,
and some of these same guys that are feeling that way also aren't necessarily supportive of the local church that's actually paying them. Like, they'll start small groups, and I know you're like, oh, look, they're trying to do outreach, but they're like going with other churches and they're doing all these things, and I'm not the new Amish. I'm not needing this thing where I have to just be, you know, our holy huddle. But there is a point, like, when your church is doing stuff that, like, you're supportive of your church because they actually do pay you. I know some of you are volunteers, but it's like it sends mixed messages. And, well, you just don't understand this generation. And maybe I don't, but there is an element that you also have older people in your church that are watching. And we don't, and I'm not one of these that, you know, walk in fear of that stuff, but dude, that's your church. Why wouldn't you, or bring that thing to your church? You know, and it's just, it's frustrating sometimes.
One of the reasons, if you look at the big C and little C church, and I don't know if that's the proper way of doing it, but that's how I do it. I had a discussion with a guy a couple years ago who believed everything was out about the big C church, the universal church. And that's the only thing that mattered. and your commitment to that. And I said, no, I think it's the other way around. I think it's Little C Church. I said, all the one and others aren't for the Big C Church. They're for our local church. You know, there's no accountability to the guy in China who's in the Big C Church that you're going to love him and bear his burdens. But there is in the Little C Church. So this is where life is. This is where our accountability goes. We should just all get along, and we should all just like be one big church, and there shouldn't be all these commitments and memberships. No, it's the Little C Church. So I'm all for loving the global church. But at the end of the day, and actually this guy was in ministry. He was being paid. I said, those people in China, they're not paying you every 2 weeks. The people here are paying you every 2 weeks. So I put it on the bottom shelf for them. Your accountability is to these people.
Do you think that part of that might be the breakdown of the generations and this generation being isolated from the older generations, and so they see generally the church rather than specifically the local?
It could be. I think another part of it is they're mad at the older people. And so they're like, I found this new thing. I remember Tim's beat this drum when he's talked about, we used to sing songs, now you worship. I remember when I had some young people that would come from, they'd go to Bible college, they'd either go to the Ville, or they'd go to Cornerstone, or they'd go to someplace, and then they got brilliant. You know, up to this point, they didn't know anything, but then they got brilliant. This could happen with, I did that. I came back and I was like trying to set my pastor straight. I mean, I think like, moron. But anyways, but there are all these things about worship, and it's all these older people, and it's offensive. It literally is offensive, because for years they actually do love the Lord. I know that they sang just great is thy faithfulness, but they actually did mean it. Now, were there some things? Sure. But it's, I don't know, there's this, and I think it's just being young, you know, sometimes, where you just think, you know, but it's also come, it's kind of that thing where we put our arm around them going, well, have you ever thought about it this way? And if they never grow up, they'll always think until their kids grow up and call them interesting, you know. So.
7, be giving.
I'm glad I don't know what people give in my church. It's just, I think that protects me from thinking a certain way. There are certain mindsets when I hear discussions with people, you know, I give with cash only and stuff like that, so there's no record. Sometimes I wonder what's going on with that, but I got to be careful judging their heart, because sometimes I wonder, do they not want a record so they can think, oh, I give, but they're not really keeping track and all those different things. And after a while, I can't worry about that. But I have to say, are you giving? Do you give regularly? The Bible talks about regularly giving, and we get the whole tithe and offering thing. And some of you probably are giving more than even just giving. You're having kids over. You're taking them out. You're doing all these different things. And for somebody to question that, that's a whole other discussion. But there's some over the years in discussions. You find out some people aren't giving.
Scripture ties heart and finances, and we can't divorce those two. So, whether we like it or not, and that, this is me and my wife. You know that. My worship, that's tied together with how I give, my attitude, how much, and all that. So, and again, just the few younger people in ministry that I know, it seems like there's a little confusion about that. I don't know if that's a generational thing or not, or what causes that, but there seems to be a little.
And I know it's the beauty of it is we don't know.
I have no idea.
Somebody knows. Somebody in the church knows. And it says something. It says something. You got a question?
I know there's one kind of model of giving that's going around younger generation. That is
Tithing time. I've never heard that. Number eight, be forgiving. I think this one's huge. This might be, for me, the main one on the whole thing. Learn early how to biblically process hurts. And I got to be honest with you. I was on a journey for decades about this, on what forgiveness should look like, what it can look like biblically. I mean... asked everybody I could, studied it, read about it. It's just
you asked Mike Iaconelli about this. He just started talking to you, and it was like a
short cool story. We were at National Youth Workers Convention somewhere, and back in the day when we were younger, we would get there early because we liked hearing the speakers. We were in the very front row,
and we wanted to see the concerts.
We
wanted to see GLAAD.
Yeah. How many know who GLAAD is?
GLAAD's good.
All right. So anyway, we're sitting, and the speaker of this session was, do you remember the movie Dead Man Walking? Sean Penn.
Susan Sarandon.
It was based on a true story.
I think it won a, she won an Oscar.
Oscar for it. Yes. True story. This lady was kidnapped by this psycho guy. He raped her multiple times, shot her in the head, put her in the trunk of a car, and left her to die. Well, she lived. And she had lived to ID this guy, and he ended up on death row. And this nun, who Susan Sarandon played, this nun who would visit this guy in jail, and I never even saw the movie, but I know the story. And so the movie is based on this nun visiting this guy in jail who's on death row, dead man walking. Well, the lady who was the victim of this crime was the speaker at this conference, the one who was shot and raped and all this stuff. And the subject of her talk was forgiveness. And long after this guy had been executed, she processed, forgiving this guy and just how that worked. And after the session was over, and National Youth Workers Convention was, they were massive. And we were on the very front row. Everybody else had gone. And it was me and Mark and our wives, the four of us, were sitting there. And I was doing this forgiveness journey, like, well, how can she do that if he's already dead? How can she forgive somebody? He didn't ask for it, and just all these questions. And we're talking about it, and Mike Iaconelli walks by. And I said, Mr. Iaconelli, can I ask you a question? And so I said, I don't think, I've always learned that you can't forgive somebody unless they ask for it, and it'd be impossible. And I kind of gave him what I understood. And he looked at me like, what? like I had three eyes or something. Like, he goes, of course you forgive. Or like just some little, quick little thing, and he walked away. So thank you. That was very helpful. But just literally, honestly, in the last 6 months, I've had clarity on this, I think, from Scripture on you just got to learn how to do that. Because somebody, including your senior pastor, will do you wrong, will burn you, will hurt you, will, and handling that biblically, loving them, praying for them, blessing them, and just, and I've seen it over and over again, if that's not done well, that's just like a handicap to ministry. That's just like you're running on one leg. It just, it's so hard if you're not going to, because it's going to happen. And if you don't learn to deal with that in a biblical way, it'll kill you.
And I don't know how often you have met somebody they're just a grudger. Have you ever met those people? And then every time you talk to them, it's the same stinking story.
Yeah, I talked to a guy the other day, two days ago. Old friend from where we used to live. I said, how you doing? He goes, I haven't talked to my parents in 5 years. They got mad at me. Literally, they live three houses away on the same street. He goes, yeah, my dad once in a while, if he sees me out, he'll look over and kind of, but we don't talk. Yeah, and grudges. And he said, yeah, we grudge pretty bad. We hold grudges. You know,
it's like you're the family crest, you know. I just hate being like that. You know, I get tired. It's like, wow.
It's exhausting to have to keep track of who's done what. And,
yeah, and there's people that do. They've got a Rolodex. Well, what you guys would go BlackBerry? No, can't use that. They keep records. So.
Yeah. So learn to handle that stuff biblically, or to kill you. Number 9 is be selective. And we talked about this a little bit earlier, but
yeah, the new thing might be a good thing, but it's not the thing.
Like even after a conference like this, there's a ton of ideas and learning to have discernment about. You know, this will work. This is something we need to pray about and talk about, take back to the team and Kim. Just because it's, I mean, not that there's a bad idea, but not every idea is a good idea for everybody for everywhere. But figuring that out, there's some wisdom to that.
Be humble. Pride always destroys. I love, you know, had opportunity to talk to Todd today and just his love for his team and bringing them up and like showing up at a WANA event. Don't you love when there's people around you that are willing to do all the stuff they do and you just go and all you're being is supportive of them? And it's just so cool to watch that. And that when somebody compliments something, that you go, yeah, well, that was actually Frank that did that. And giving people, you know, credit as much as possible, just passing it around, that to me says so much, as opposed to, and I did this, and we've all been around those people, and you're like, shut up, you know, we get it, you're so cool.
And the other thing about humility is, it's the great deodorant. If a person's humble, man, that goes a long way with covering up stuff that you do wrong and you just might drop the ball. But I'm thinking of, try to be vague here, but I'm thinking of two, they were worship leader guys, and one was really good, really accomplished, but there was this arrogance. And he was so good at what he did, but it was like, it just was uncomfortable. And then I'm thinking of this other guy, who wasn't as good, but just oozed humility. I'd be with this guy all day long. Philippians 2, Christ setting the pattern for us with that. You know, you can't go wrong with humility. And in ministry, and this might be just my personal thing, but there's nothing more distasteful as a minister, somebody doing ministry arrogantly. That just is like nails on the chalkboard to me. I can't stand that. And I'm not sure the Lord can either. But humility is huge.
Next page, or next turnover, be sharpened. Have a few really good friends in ministry. And that's part of how God's blessed me having Dave in my life. Boy, and I'll talk to him or something happens and I'm just frustrated and he doesn't. I mean, there are times when all I need is somebody to agree with me. You ever have that where you're like, even if you're just venting, you just listen to me. But then after a time, you know, hey, I thought about what you said, and he comes back with something else that I need to hear, and you know, it's like, you're right. And be receptive to that. Be receptive to the loving criticism. Because sometimes in our church, I love this line from one of my elders, in every criticism, there's a nugget of truth. Sometimes it's really hard to find, but in every criticism, there's a nugget of truth. Even if the fact of how you respond to it says something about you. But when it comes to, I do not know how I would be doing if Dave wasn't in my life, for years of being able to call and or just text, please pray for me. I'm feeling really weak right now. Please pray for me. And knowing that he's praying for me, that's huge.
We were talking on the drive here. We drove here together from Springfield, Illinois. We're talking about friends and things in the past, and neither one he's my best friend, and I think I'm his best friend.
Yes.
But neither one of us were, and we knew each other then, but we weren't in each other's wedding, and how that would look different now. So, you know, who would you ask to be standing up next to you in your wedding? Is that person sharpening you? And one of the things I've noticed about, I used to have more friends, but my pool of friends is kind of getting smaller as I get older. And the people who are really sharpening me. And I don't know about you guys. This again is just a me thing. But right now, this is going to sound terrible. No, I'm not going to say that. but it's helpful when it's somebody else doing ministry, not in your church, you know, that you can just kind of vent to and you can run the hard questions by. Sometimes that's really not wise to do with people in your church, but having a guy in another town say that's really valuable. And if you can have one or two of those, that's golden. And you're not going to have 10 of those, but if you have a couple, you're doing really well, and that'll really serve you well and sharpen you to have that kind of relationship with somebody. Be encouraged.
I know we're as the guys, and we got to leave. Let's leave down with this in about 3 minutes if we can, so we can open it for questions. But now I'm talking as the pastor who wants my youth pastors to succeed. I know there's some pastors, they just feel like they're sabotaging. But I do want you to be encouraged just by the fact that down deep I want you to succeed. Because when you succeed, actually I look better. I mean, let's face it. You're making me look good if you're succeeding. But there are, I'd say, the vast majority of pastors really do love their staff. I really think. I don't think they're all like, you know, like that despicable me guy. Yeah. I think they really do down deep want you to be encouraged, because down deep I'm for you. I found out later how many times my senior pastor, people would come to him and he protected me, or things came up and he was like going to bat for me. And now he didn't go every time he had a meeting. Hey, just so you know, Marge is angry. But I saved you, you know. It didn't do that, but I know there had to be times where he goes, you know, cut him some slack. So be conscious. Everything reflects back on me. This is huge, because what you do does impact me.
And this is kind of the other side of the coin of the previous one. We need to be for our senior pastors as much as they're for us, and cheer them on and want to have their back and want them to look good.
Because people will pull that Absalom thing, yeah. Or they'll work you to become Absalom. Because we're Robin, they're Batman, and everybody loves Robin. You know, I think everybody loves Tonto. But it is one of those things where you have times where it's like they like to work that guy, and probably it's because they have something against the big guy. And because I had people did that at the church I was at, they would come over and they would be my buddy, and the reason is they didn't like him, and I wouldn't let them play that game. I would protect him. So.
But just being aware how you run the youth ministry, the safety things, you know, it doesn't end with you. It all ultimately goes back to reflecting on the ministry of the under shepherd of your church, and you want him to succeed. You want him to look good. You want him there. So you're kind of like running interference for him, you know. And I think that's being a good support person. Like, I want this ministry. I want this church to thrive. I want him to look good. I want him not to have to deal with stuff. So being conscious of that is really helpful. And then 14 is be diligent.
Be on time, work hard. That's self-explanatory, but there's a tendency. And so many things, you know, video games, Netflix, there's all these different things that just, you know, and if there's no accountability, it's really easy to, and if you need to put in things that will help you with accountability, then you do that just to protect you from you. You look at what Chris was saying the other day about just online activity, and you think about the fact of, are you doing that in other areas of your life? If you know you have a tendency to slide into the shoe of laziness, that old shoe, then you know, I can't go there. I've got to find ways to not go there.
And I don't know if it's generation. I don't, like, this is just like being the old guy, but work ethic doesn't seem like it's as popular as it used to be. I don't know if that's just me, but that is so huge. And again, that covers up for a lot of other. You know, you work hard, you show up. You know, it doesn't take any talent to do that. And that goes a long way in ministry. You know, sometimes in ministry, the person who succeeds is the person who just hangs in there and is diligent. Not maybe the most gifted and the most brings the most to the party, but is doing it, is working hard. Like, and you could go all day with sports analogies with that. Guys who wrestle, the guys are just willing to put in the time. You know, sometimes that's the difference. Might not be the best, but they're the hardest workers. So I think the same thing goes for ministry. So.
Yeah, there's been over the years, and now it's been some of the golden boys. There were some guys that even were at our snow trip that were like, man, the guy's good looking, got a nice wife, he's got all these different things. He's the guy who ends up, something interesting happens, and you're like, what in the world? That guy? And I'm like, thank you, Lord, for making me so ugly. questions?
Amen.
Let me say this too, with the question.
Okay,
this is just a really quick us getting together for about an hour, coming up with 14 things. There's probably 400 things, you know. So if you're like listening and you go, you know, here's another one. This is not at all an exhaustive list. So not only questions, but if you have an addition, like, hey, this is something good too. Open mic. Tim.
Yeah, I had kind of a question, maybe observation. You know, I've seen up speaking with Rob this morning. I might do a seminar next year on 25 reasons why I got fired from being a youth pastor. You know, and probably hold hands with yours pretty well. But we do things. We go work with teenagers. I mean, man, kids in junior high just 3 years in high school, 4 years at most, hopefully, and we wouldn't have a lot of time. And so there is an urgency that I hope that we have. And so what's the balance? You know, you guys are saying, hey, you know, slow down, and you're part of the program and all that. I totally get that. I totally understand it. And I preach it as well. But what's the balance from the pastor's point of view toward me as a youth pastor point of view? How much communication? I mean, you say slow down because I said so. You say slow down because the old people don't like it, you know. What's your dialogue? What, you know, just in short, how much of a balance is there to? okay, my plane's over. The alarm.
That's your alarm? Wow, Mr. Rogers.
that would put me to sleep. That alarm.
Yes, yeah, I for FDA. No, it's just telling me it's time to do something. But rather than
balance between.
Yeah, what's good? Hey, we can't do this, or can't do this for these reasons, and so, in other words, I want to sell you my program as a youth pastor, but do you want to tell me what you're doing as a pastor, and how do you?
That depends on what that, because I think most pastors that would have a brain and would look at you and go, you know, and you seem to know what you're doing, stuff like that. I don't know if they do that. I think the thing, when we're saying pull back the reins, is the guy who wants to do every sort of thing, and let's do this, and it's like, we could get to guitars, you know, whatever, in about a year, but he wants it in 2 months. And is he willing to wait that year? Now, some churches, maybe that isn't the case, and maybe you have to say, maybe that's the hill that I'd be willing to die on or go someplace else because this guy don't get it. But, I think a lot can be...
Are you talking about tension between...
Maybe a communicative question. It could be a communication question. Communicate with me. Maybe I'm asking you as a pastor. Communicate with me and don't just tell me no. You know, tell me, we can't do that because, or we need to wait because.
Yeah. Some of that goes back to trust going the other way. You know, it's really a good thing when you're working for a guy who trusts you. So we talked about trusting him, one of the huge blessings of I was a youth pastor in the same church for 20 years, was the pastor trusted me. And I can't count more than two or three times I went to him with something and he said no, because he trusted me. And that's huge. And so part of it, you need to decide if you want to live with that. You know, if you're working for a guy who's just like, it's always no, 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 then you might say, you know, this isn't a good fit. Philosophically, we're not on the same page, too. That's good.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I hate it when you open your mouth and nothing comes out.
Opa Lopez.
When you think about relationships with other staff in your church, how much time do you try to pursue them personally versus just in the trenches of ministry doing the work?
I think that depends on a couple things. One, there's certain people that I don't necessarily want to spend a ton of time with, even though we work in ministry together. Like the old Mark Lowry line, you love your family. You'd cry at their funeral, but you don't want to go on vacation with them. You know, and so there are certain people that in ministry, or that my wife and his wife doesn't get along. And it isn't a bad thing, it's just they're not. So we'll do stuff, but I think some of that is personality driven. Because there's certain people that you just and don't feel guilty about that. Don't always, and sometimes the reason that they don't have time with other people is because, you know, like, why are they so friendless? Well, they kind of breed friendlessness, you know. And so it's don't punish yourself. You know, I got to do this, or because ding dong dang it. That's
sorry,
but it is one of those things where I think that's a great. I don't know.
I thought the same thing. I think some of it's a function of personality, but also it's all the philosophy ministry of the church. Because you know, we know guys, they go on vacations with staff, and they do, and like John said, that's not vacation. that's work to me, and I love them, but you know that would be working all the time. So you know, but that's me. You know, for some guys, they do everything together. Their kids grow, you know, so I don't think there's a right and wrong to it.
And don't feel guilty because you may have heard of another church that's doing that. So, man, I wish we'd do that. You don't necessarily have to do that. As long as you're getting along in ministry, there's not gossip going on and bitterness and jealousy about, you know.
And that's probably a top-down thing. If that's being modeled by the lead guy, probably that's kind of the culture of the staff. That'll happen naturally or not, you know. Then maybe somebody doesn't fit in. But
are we answering your question? I don't know.
Is that what you're?
Yeah. Well, part of what you said, just in that it flows out of philosophy, ministry, and personality. Just good perspective for me. I know I have a fantastic working relationship with my lead pastor, and we don't spend a lot of time together outside. But there are certain things that we will do throughout the course of the year. Where we'll just hang out together and not talk about ministry things. And that has meant a lot to me.
Cool. Yeah.
Because now we can just be friends.
Yeah.
And that's what refuels me to dive back into the trenches. And I need that. And I wasn't getting that at
Some of it also is just stage of life. The man I worked under was 30 years older than me. My kids are little. You know, he's done. And so, I mean, we did some things together, but it was never going to be this. So that's, I think that comes into play, too, sometimes.
So the self-performing here is just, it's not a make or break it type of thing. It's just what's going to work.
Yeah. Anyone else?
That's huge. And go ahead. I'm sorry, Tom.
Also, public, by name, encouragement, you know, like praise to other people. I think that's important too. Say, hey, this wasn't all me. This was, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that is that line, and that motivates and encourages.
It depends on your love language, because my love language is words of encouragement. And so I was like, man, you felt that way, but there's that line that Reagan said back in the day, don't worry about who gets the credit when you succeed, or something along those lines. And it's like, yeah, I know, but he's always taking the credit. So it's like, you know, I'll hear these things, and I'll be in like meetings, and I was hearing them, you know, like it was his idea. I'm going, you know. So I try my hardest, you know, like I'm a better pastor, I hope, because I was a youth pastor, but I try my hardest, like constantly giving other people credit, because it's huge. Because after a while, they all figure it out. You know, the emperor has very little clothing at that point. So.
Anyone else? I think we're done.
All right.
I don't want to interrupt you. Thank you, guys.